This hour of Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
It's Overdrive for your Thursday. Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes. I'm in all week. Hazy's back on Monday. Gordon Miller is with me on the program, and we're with you, as we always are, on Overdrive for the next 3 hours.
The drive-in was easy today.
This is a follow-up to the drive-in was difficult story from yesterday.
Yeah, piece of cake today. Left the house at 3, here at 3:35.
So now you don't know what to do tomorrow.
Now I don't know what to do.
Because you're either going to leave at 3 o'clock to remain consistent and get screwed by traffic, or and it'll be wide open.
And show up at 3:59:30 again, come blasting through the back door.
See, here's what I'm going to suggest. Because I...
Did I ask for a suggestion?
Nope, but okay. It's unsolicited.
Thank you.
It's free, too. I'm not even going to charge you.
Oh, wow.
Might ask you to go get me a water in the calf in a commercial
again?
Break at some point during... Well, you typically offer, and I just assume you'll be doing it again. So that'll be your penance. But if you're coming from Young and Egg, it means that you're going to be heading east to get to work. Tomorrow being Friday, beautiful summer weekend, cottagers heading north, clogging up the eastbound lanes of the 401, out through, you know, Oshawa and all that to get to the 35-115, you might want to leave. I can't predict how it's going to be, but you might want to leave just a little bit of extra time. Just a little bit.
Okay, I will. If I get here early, it's on you.
Because I'm... Well, you came by and said hi today in the prep room and all that. That was good.
I've never been to the prep room before.
You found your way, though.
Doesn't seem to be a lot of prep going on.
No, not today. Not today. There was a lot of...
Seemed very not preppish.
There was a lot of watching of the Open Championship.
Yeah, I had that on.
There was a lot of discussion about how to advance the Kawhi story. You see, I love this Kawhi stuff, all right? Have we heard Kawhi Leonard say one word?
In a year.
Have you followed the storyline arc since the trade?
Yeah.
Kawhi, reports suggest, has no interest in reporting to the Toronto Raptors.
Not going to report. Doesn't upset about the trade.
Doesn't want to be here.
Right.
Didn't say a word himself.
No.
Now, today, reports that... The Raptors have been in contact with Kawhi and his people, and he is warming up to the idea to playing in Toronto. Words uttered directly by Kawhi Leonard equals zero.
Yeah.
So
how about we wait until he says something, and then the problem is when he says something, he probably won't say anything.
Well, he's not going to commit to anything beyond...
Well, he might not even commit to this year. Hey, he's a man of extremely...
He's got to play, Gord. If he's healthy, he's going to be there. I mean, this is his profession. He's going to make north of $20 million this year. He can be fined for any part of training camp or any practice or any game that he misses, preseason, regular season, or otherwise. Like, he's playing this year. He's playing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you really, really didn't want to go, you'd say, I'm not playing, and force a deal.
Like you can.
But you're not going to do that.
Well, I mean, the thing is that... The opinion seems to be that he's a diminished enough asset that San Antonio couldn't max out his value.
That's certainly the take in San Antonio, isn't it?
I mean,
the overwhelming take in San Antonio is that it? Now, there is some of, you know, Greg Popovich got what he likes, a veteran, reliable player. Right? He loves them. Like, he wants Ginobili, like, you know, there was talk Ginobili might retire. He's like, hey, man, we need you back. I mean, Popovich loves veteran players.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see if he can get more out of DeMar the player. Can he turn him into, I'll say, a defensive stalwart, but a better defensive player than he is?
You know, it's funny. I spent the day talking to some NHL management people today, and one of the hardest things to be in sports is good but not great. It's hard to be good, right? I mean, you got to draft well, you got to develop your players, you got to make good trades. And you get good, but you don't break through. And then the question becomes, now what? When you look at your team and realistically, and one of the hardest things for teams to do is to realistically evaluate their team and say, are we good enough? And if the answer is no, now what do? Do you take a step back to try to make that leap forward? Do you gamble with a core that's been really good, tinker with it, and bring someone else in? that can be dangerous as well. But if you reach the conclusion that you're not good enough to win a championship, that you're just going to be good, then you probably make this move.
Right, and we've debated from the Raptors' perspective whether there is a particular value to winning 50-ish games and having home court in the first round of the playoffs and knowing that eventually you're going to stub your toe sometime in May. And are you okay with that? I like the fact that Masai Ujiri, and I use the Vince McMahon line from 20 years ago, balls the size of grapefruits. I like that he went for this yesterday. I think whatever happens here, Gord, this is a go-for-it moment.
If you're not good enough, then you're wasting your time.
It was a go-for-it moment when Alex Anthopoulos went and got Troy Tulowitzki because they had to get Jose Reyes the hell off of shortstop. Go-for-it moment when they went and got David Price days later from Detroit. Go-for-it moment when you go and you get a Kawhi Leonard with no promises beyond this year.
You've got to be good enough. I mean, if you're going for it and you're not good enough, now you're just wasting assets to try to get...
But you're in a conference.
Right. But
where...
You know what I'm saying? Like, if you are the Miami Heat right now, you're not going for it. You're not going to get this guy because you're not good enough around him.
Who do you think in the Eastern Conference can go to training camp this year, Gord, with where everything is at now? Go to training camp this year and convince themselves legitimately. Not in... with a backdrop behind you and a microphone to speak to your public and your fan base, but convince themselves legitimately behind closed doors, front offices with their coaches, we got a shot to get out of the East this year.
Boston. Yeah, I think Boston.
Toronto.
If
Kawhi is healthy and all that, is Philadelphia there?
Probably not yet.
Is Milwaukee with the Freak?
No.
And then beyond that, Indiana.
Indiana's kind of interesting because they're deep and they
grind and all that stuff. Like my point is it's all wide open. And then you take, if you have Boston in the second or third round of the playoffs, you take your shot in a 7-game series.
So one of the managers I talked to today said there's three kinds of teams, you know, on a base level. Teams that are going forward, so they're young. You know, the Buffalo Sabres would be one of those teams. They're going forward. They've got young players. They think they're on the way up, right? Toronto would be a team going, the Leafs, going forward. Or you're going backwards. You're over the top of the hill. You've been good, but now your players are older. You're capped out, whatever. The worst thing to be is the team that's standing still. That's no man's land, right? Standing still. You're just good. You're never going to be great. You're never going to be terrible. You're just going to be good. And that's the worst place to be. And the Raptors were a really good team. Bordering on great. I mean, 59 wins, not much playoff success to show for it.
But when you stub your toe as badly as they did against Cleveland, it doesn't matter beyond that.
But Scott, my point is not just Cleveland. It wasn't just that series, but basically, what, 4 times in 5 years underperforming the playoffs?
No question.
Four to five?
And they would always make the series they won extremely complicated.
Right. So good bordering on great, but not yet great. And it's a really hard place to be. And that was the Washington Capitals for a long time.
It's the San Jose Sharks.
It's the San Jose
Still.
Sharks. Still. Right. Now, the Sharks went to the final.
But they didn't win.
But didn't win. So for them, for San Jose, to evaluate their team and say, are we good enough legitimately to win a championship? There's a famous conversation between a coach and a general manager in the NHL. And the team had just lost, and it's about a month of the trade deadline. And the coach says, this team stinks. Our team is no good. Our defense isn't good enough. Our goaltending is not good enough. Our guys up front are too young. We're not good enough. And the manager said, you're right. We're not. So I'm not wasting assets at the deadline trying to make this team better. We'll just ride it out. And the coach is like, no, hang on a second, right? Like, because if you're going to say that, it's really hard, Scott, to objectively analyze your own team. For one thing, teams constantly overvalue their own prospects.
Or their own players.
Or their own players. But especially guys they drafted and they developed, they're way too heavily invested in them, for the most part, emotionally. They just can't.
The greatest overestimation of a roster in my lifetime in this city.
Can I guess?
Go ahead.
2013 Leafs?
I would take it a step further back a few years. The decision that Phil Kessel was the final piece of this team's puzzle and what they gave up to get him because they needed the scoring winger to round out the hockey team. That was the greatest, in my view, overestimation.
Okay, so
because I'm telling you this, this was always my argument. I don't know what other people believe, Gord, about 2013. I said, everybody's getting pissy that this team coughed it up in the final 10 minutes in overtime of Game 7 against Boston. If that had been an 82-game regular season, you wouldn't have been mad about Game 7 because there wouldn't have been a Game 1.
They wouldn't have played the
18, the 18-wheeler from the year before and the two subsequent collapses in 14 and 15 were proof that 13 would have happened as well had they had to have played 34 more games.
It was a lockout shortened season. They had a brilliant month that propelled them to the playoffs. You're right. The Phil Kessel deal is an interesting one because Brian Burke justified that at the time, you know, trading those picks, saying, I can't guarantee you that those picks will score 30 goals. I can guarantee you that Phil Kessel will. And he did.
Yes, but
year after year after year, he did. Now, was he the wrong personality for Toronto? Was he miscast as a lead dog? For sure he was.
Right, but you don't acquire Phil Kessel unless you don't plan to make him the lead dog.
Right.
You do what Pittsburgh did, which is you get a guy who's not interested in the 200-foot game, who plays on the wing, who's got a shot from God and can fly up and down and score 30-plus goals and can play on a team up the middle that has Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and Nick Bonino at the time, or like whoever,
center. But also has Chris Letang and a core of guys
But that's my point, Gord.
Yeah.
The rest of the roster, and that is always what I've argued with the Phil Kessel stuff. And I love this, by the way. It's like a Thursday in mid-July, and we're back on the Phil Kessel stuff.
I'm driving up Avenue Road today. Guy wearing a Leaf sweater, blue, like it's, 33 degrees outside right now?
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
He's got the full-on Leaf.
Suns out, guns out, as he hacked off the sleeves?
No, full-on. Like, he had to be roasting in that thing. July 19th?
Yeah, July 19th. But my point always with the Kessel argument is I'm not slagging Phil.
Right.
What I'm saying is he was brought here, I would presume, because they saw him as a complementary piece to what they had and mischaracterized misunderstood their own roster when they did that.
They didn't think they could score. And so they traded two firsts and a second. So it winds up being Dougie Hamilton, Tyler Seguin, Jared Knight for Phil Kessel, because they didn't think they could score, and they thought Kessel could score.
Well, they were right about that. He absolutely can score.
Mm-hmm. So the example I would give would be the Vancouver Canucks signing Louis Erickson as a free agent years ago.
Like, yeah.
You know, like, where does that come? I mean, you sign a 30-year-old guy
to
a six-year deal. Your team's not going. I mean, this was an attempt to milk the last they could out of the Sedin twins.
And ownership really likes the idea of playoffs, even if it's not a realistic notion.
And the problem is, you know, and I'll give you an example of this. Don Waddell was the GM in Atlanta, and ownership said to him, you got to make the playoffs. You have to make the playoffs. So he goes out, he makes a trade with Philadelphia, gets Alexei Zhitnik, and deals like three young players. It's a terrible deal for Atlanta, except the Thrashers made the playoffs. They got swept, but ownership gave him the orders, they made the playoffs.
Well, and listen, O-Dog's probably up at the chalet right now chilling, so I'm counting on him not hearing this because I don't want him or anybody else to misconstrue it as a defense of the Fergler, of JFJ. But John Ferguson Jr. did present a rebuild plan at one point during his general managership, and that was categorically rejected because there were bonuses for certain people based on playoff appearances.
Yeah, and
so this notion that, well, the city of Toronto and the Maple Leafs fans won't accept a rebuild, that was a BS narrative that kept getting thrown out there. The city of Toronto won't accept a rebuild. We could all see what the team was, and apparently Ferguson, I'm not saying Ferguson was the right guy to rebuild it, but he at least presented a plan, and it was nixed because he said, no, we got to contend. We got to get into the playoffs.
And the knock on the Burke deal for Kessel was he had just started as the GM. There was no reason to make a lightning strike that early. You had lots of goodwill. You had time. Why rush? And I get that. It's fascinating, though, like, and you talk about the ownership dynamic. It's hard to sell them on rebuilds. Hey, it's hard to sell them on buyouts. Like, it's easy to say, oh, yeah, they should just buy that guy out. You got to go to the owner and say, even though it's, you know, we're going to save money on the cap, we're going to pay Christian Ehrhoff $900,000 until 2028 not to play for us. We're essentially going to pay him $1 million a year not to play for
the
us.
Two that-
and by the way, we're also paying Ville Leino not to play for us. We're paying Cody Hodgson not to play for us. Like, I mean, it goes on. And when the Flyer management had to go to the late Ed Snyder and say, we got to buy Brizgalov up.
Ooh. And Brizgalov was essentially Ed Snyder saying, get me a goalie.
Right. And they got to go to him and say, Mr. S, it ain't working. And he's got to write the check. I don't care how you think it's easy to do. Telling ownership bad news is really
hard. Can you
really
remind me the Islanders situation? Yashin got a major buyout, and that is now since completed.
I think he came off the cap last year, huh?
Yeah, so but
well, then, season four last
it was
year.
Only recently. DiPietro was a compliance buyout.
So a compliance buyout just means,
how much money did those guys get? It just means they don't count against the cap anymore.
Yeah, so compliance buyouts were done after work stoppages where you could make the buyout and none of his salary would count against the cap. Rick DiPietro makes $1.5 million a year until June of 2029.
Sweet deal. Who's cutting that check? It's not Chuck Wong anymore, right? It would be the current Islander.
Whoever buys the team inherits that.
Yeah.
You write that check every... Well, it's not. He gets paid every player, he gets paid every 2 weeks. Now, you can choose to pay him up front. You wouldn't do that. But, he gets paid every 2 weeks, like every player, $1.5 million a year until 2029.
That's like the Bobby Bonilla deal with the New York Mets. Yeah.
No, that was different.
It wasn't a buyout.
Deferred money is a bad deal for players.
Dave Steeb had deferred money.
The Montreal Canadiens used to give guys deferred money. You're better off with $600,000. Sorry, you're better off with $1 million up front than you are making $60,000 for 20 years, which actually amounts to $1.2 million. You're way better off. Take the $600,000.
And invest it.
Yeah.
And let it grow.
Yeah. Because, I'm going to make this for this long? Oh, wow. We'll pay you $1.5 million for 30 years? Okay. Well, give me $30 million up front. I'll take that.
I'll take it. I'll live off what I need, and I'll invest the rest.
Yeah.
And let it grow at its own pace, which will outpace.
So deferred money has been
staggered payments,
so not buyouts, because buyouts are by definition not deferred. But deferred payments were a bad deal for the most part.
Joel Beall of Golf Digest is going to join us at 4:30. The Open Championship is underway.
Carnoustie was kind of tame today. Now there are those great cringe.
Tame is relative. I mean, I heard Jordan Spieth's comments on the Golf Channel. I was watching it this morning, and sometimes those grandstands deceive you, because beneath the grandstand, you can't get a sense of the wind, but the ball gets up there, and you've got to trust your gut, hit it straight, hit it left, and have the wind take it back.
You hear Mike Weir's story about the practice round with Jack Nicklaus?
No.
So they're playing a practice round. I think it was at St. Andrews, and Nicklaus said to him, the one thing I'd be careful about here is the gallery shields the wind. So you won't get a good sense of the wind. You got to look at the flags to see what the wind really is. And Weir said, what if there's no gallery? And Nicklaus said, I don't know.
Just lick the finger and hold it up?
There's always a gallery for me, kid.
Yeah, well, good point. Tin Cup is the clubhouse leader. Kevin Kisner.
Now tell the people why you call him that.
Because Kevin Costner starred in Tin Cup.
Yes. So
Kevin Kisner is your clubhouse leader. He's 500 par.
To our knowledge, he never put three in the water with Tommy Chong as his caddy.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to Sunday yet, though.
It's early. Yeah.
Give me a ball.
And we got to get Tommy Chong over to Scotland.
Man. Hey, man. I was there for Vandeveld. I was at Carnoustie in 99.
19 years ago.
Yeah, for Vandeveld. I was there. I covered the Open from 99 to 2002. I was there for Ian Woosnam when he found an extra club in his bag. I was standing right there. That cost him a spot in the Ryder Cup team.
Yikes.
Two-stroke penalty knocked him out of the top 10 at the Open. And he,
how do you get out to the first tee?
Well, he was hitting two drivers. He was hitting two drivers on the practice tee, and his caddy left. He fired his caddy, if not in mid-round, then right after.
That is a fireable offense. Like, because you know how it is. It's like, don't hold me accountable for anything other than making the shots.
Well, Curtis Strange made the famous comment at our news tee that he should have just... Kristoff was Vandeveld's caddy. Like, he looked like he was... He looked like he just wandered on the golf course and grabbed someone's bag. But he's like... When he asked for the driver, he should have broke it in half. No, you're not hitting driver here.
Mm.
But it's... I was the funny thing about covering golf is, for the most part, you don't really spend much time on the course. When it comes down to the final, you got to watch it on TV. So you're in a press tent, and they bring the players in there afterwards and stuff. But you walk around a little bit. But just watching it, and it was just stunning. And then the next year, Tiger. I mean, the next year, Tiger just tore it apart. He won the U.S. Open by a mile, and then did the same thing at St. Andrews. I mean, that was peak Tiger. That was Pebble Beach and St. Andrews, two of the most famous golf courses in the world, and he just tore them to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
He was so much longer. He was a long hitter. He brought fitness to golf. Tiger was the only guy in the fitness trailer for a long time. They've had to bring extra fitness trailers now. Like, Dustin Johnson does like 2 hours of yoga a day.
What does Miguel Angel Jimenez do?
He smokes three boxes of cigars.
That's some sweet ass stretches, and, though. Or
the mechanic. Isn't it great?
John Daly, baby, you can't pull fat.
I watch Fred Couples stretch one day. So put your arms out at shoulder height. He can touch his elbows at the back.
That's
like he's
so
like,
he's got to be double jointed.
Well, he's not very big. Like Freddie Boom Boom Couples was not a big guy. He pounded it. Like, he was a big, big hitter and not a big guy.
Hmm.
But Tiger was, I mean, like, now all, like, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, they're all, like...
Well, they're all jacked, yeah. A lot of them. I mean, Patrick Reed's not, but then he goes and wins the Masters. But I understand your point. And as you know, Tiger ended up taking it too far.
Or he got hurt. I mean, just, you know, I mean...
Well, the Navy SEAL stuff and all that. I mean, when he kind of got off on his own little training tangent there and might have taken it a little far and... injured his body. He got hurt overdoing it, Gord.
Well, but also his swing was especially violent.
Right.
So tough on his knee, tough on his left knee, tough on his back.
But I don't think you need to be training with Navy SEALs to play golf.
True. He's got that kinetic tape today. Jack Nicklaus for years traveled with his own pillow because one time he turned up at the Open.
He has a MyPillow?
I'm not prepared to say that.
Pillow might be a MyPillow.
I think he predates MyPillow, but okay. Maybe. But he traveled with his own pillow for a long time because he stayed in a hotel, had a weird pillow, woke up with a crick in his neck, and so he always had his own pillow.
I threw this out there on Twitter, and I got a lot of people agreeing with me, Gord, but one person suggested, well, listen, I listened to you yesterday and say, don't fall in love with players. I threw it out on Twitter. I said, DeMar DeRozan should be the first Raptor to have his number retired. And that obviously is not going to happen for a long time because mm-hmm. I presume he's still got the better part of a decade left in the league. And you wouldn't do that. You would not retire an active player's number while he's playing for another team. So we're looking at 10-plus years probably until DeMar DeRozan's number goes into the rafters, and I believe that it will. And I'm arguing it should be first. First ahead of Vince.
Yep.
First ahead of Bosch, if we're even considering Bosch. And then beyond that, I don't think there are any names.
What if Kyle Lowry plays another 5-6 years for the Raptors?
You confident that happens?
Just asking the question.
Plays another 5-6 years and retires? Okay, we'll talk in 5-6 years when he goes out, if he goes out a Raptor. But I'm saying right now.
Right now, yeah.
Right now, DeMar DeRozan.
As someone who, I love the Raptors, I like watching them play, and I've enjoyed watching them play for a long time. He, to me, is the best Raptor. Vince Carter won a slam dunk contest and was a really good player. But to me, DeRozan was a better
player. Well, and Vince bailed.
And the way he laughed.
Well, and he also acknowledged that he was not giving it 100 each and every night out. That is a problem. Now, there's been forgiveness and there's been the video tribute. I was at that game when Memphis was in town a few years ago, and it was...
I forgot he played for Memphis.
Standing O, and he had the tear in his eye, and there was some sort of... reparation between fan base and Vince Carter that night. But what's happened has happened. To quote the great Jesse Litch, it happened what happened. And it happened with Vince Carter. He didn't leave on the best of terms. I think DeMar DeRozan is the guy. He should be the flag bearer. He should be the first to get his number up in the Raptors.
And I think the fact that he was drafted by the Raptors, you know, was a really good, an all-star player for them. Yeah, for sure. I think.
Wanted to be here, spoke out and bravely.
Does Kawhi Leonard want to be here?
Well, he's warming to the idea. He has not.
We think he's warming to the idea.
We have not heard that from him. We also haven't heard from him that he doesn't want to be here at all. But reports suggest he is warming to the idea after an initial conversation.
Do you think it's like
the Raptors?
Do you think he like sits in a large chair in a room and if he lifts his right index finger, that's yes, and if it's left index finger, like, is that what we're doing here? Like, I mean, it seems odd. The one thing that strikes me as odd is his trade has happened and no one's talked about it yet.
Well, Masai had to get back from Africa. I think there's going to be a press conference
tomorrow.
Right, but
why not wait till Friday to announce it?
Well, probably would have gotten out, right? The Waj or Shams, somebody would have had it. So,
but it's not really a trade until you announce it, and you announce it Friday morning. And then
why not wait until the physical's completed? But that's also another story for another day. Well, we're going to get back on the golf train here in just a second, Gord. But first, I will tell you that Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. Joel Beall of Golf Digest on day one of the Open Championship. It's Scott MacArthur. It's Gord Miller. It's Overdrive. TSN 1050.
Can I ask a question?
See, I'm always worried.
What?
When we start a segment, especially a short one, with an exhale into the microphone.
Well, it's about the music. Okay, so I do Leafs Lunch most of the season with Andy Petrillo. And then I do Overdrive a little bit during the summer. It's always metal.
It's their show. And they're the ones who decide the music.
Is Hayes a metalhead?
We are guests.
Is Hayes a metalhead?
Mulsey,
no, Hayes likes the Rolling Stones. AC/DC is not metal, though.
Yeah.
Not?
No.
Okay.
Classic rock.
What would you like? Mulls takes.
Well, you know,
request.
Like, you know, like Green Day. Can't do Springsteen, can we? That's a.
I love Springsteen. Absolutely, we can do Springsteen.
Okay. There we go. Okay, so we got a little Springsteen, and we.
I just find it's a lot of AC/DC, Metallica.
I'm just singing Green Day in my head right now, so you can
American
take it
Idiot.
Away. No, I'm not. No, I am not singing American Idiot. And I'm what's that song? Time of Your Life. Yeah. That's what's going on in my head right now.
That's one of those songs that people don't get.
Sarah McLachlan, I Will Remember You, and Green Day, Time of Your Life for all of the tribute videos, all the time.
I know, but
pick one of the two.
But people,
boom.
But people don't know what those songs are about. Like, I Will Remember You is not a happy song. And it's like people come up to Sting and say, yeah, we play our wedding song was I'll Be Watching You, Every Breath You Take. It's a song about stalking.
Like, in this day and age of social media, you need to check the phones every now and then.
Ronald Reagan wanted to use Born in the USA as his, you know, campaign song. And Springsteen's like, do you know what it's about?
I love it. Somebody asked me once, Gord, on a podcast, if you were a major league closer,
what would be your entry song?
And I said No Shelter by Rage Against the Machine, and then I went back and listened to the lyrics, and it's like all communist propaganda and anti-American stuff. I said, yeah, this wouldn't work in 29 of the 30 ballparks, and probably not even in the one Canadian one either. I just like the beat.
It's got a good beat, easy to dance to.
All right, Joel Beall of Golf Digest to recap round one of the Open Championship. Tin Cup, Kevin Kisner is your leader at 5 under par. It's Overdrive with Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller, TSN 1050. You're in a good place.
I'm in a good place.
Now, happy guy.
Now, we can line up some B.B. King.
Mulls is your DJ, man. Just
Mulls, is B.B. King possible?
I don't know. Let's not push it here, Gord.
Can I tell you my B.B. King story?
Malzy's got the on and off switch, too.
Yeah. Can I tell you my B.B. King story?
You have a B.B. King story?
I do.
Is this because you went to a B.B. King's, like in New York or Chicago?
Memphis.
Or you met B.B. King?
Didn't meet him, but how about this? Going to do a CFL game in Memphis.
The Mad Dogs.
The Memphis Mad Dogs are playing. And so the day before, I go to B.B. King's bar to buy a shirt. And the marquee says, performing one night only tonight, B.B. King. It's his birthday. He always performs in his bar in Memphis on his birthday. So I said to the woman, do you have any tickets? She goes, where are you from? Like, that's been sold out for months. I said, oh, I'm from Canada. I'm here to do a CFL game. She says, oh, my cousin plays in that league. I said, what's his name? She said, Glenn Rogers. I said, Glenn Rogers Jr.? She goes, yeah. I said, yeah, I know him. He's playing here next week. She's like, oh, my goodness. She says, hang on a second. She calls downstairs. Go downstairs. I go see this guy. He gets us four tickets. He gives me four tickets. I pay for them. We sat like 30 feet back and watched B.B. King in his own bar in Memphis.
Are you going to write a book one day?
For dropping a CFL player's name.
Write a book of short stories, things that have happened to me.
On the road.
On the road by Gordon Miller.
There you go.
All right. Round one in the books, the Open Championship. And it should be because it's what, like 20 minutes before 10 p.m. there right now in Carnoustie. Joel Beall of Golf Digest joins us on Overdrive. And our Golf Insider is brought to you by Subaru. Summer nights are made for Subaru with lease rates from 0.5% at your local Ontario Subaru dealer. Subaru, confidence in motion. Joel, thanks for taking some time this afternoon. Day one of the Open Championship, Carnoustie, did it play the way you expected it would?
I think so. I think with the burnout conditions, everyone's expecting lower scores than were normally associated with Carnoustie. I think, though, the board speaks to just a testament of the diversity the game speaks to. You have Kevin Kisner, one of the shortest hitters right there at 500, but then you have Tony Finau, Jon Rahm, and Rory McIlroy, some of the biggest hitters right there as well. Zach Johnson, Russell Henley, also pea shooters. So there's a good diversity on the board that there's no real one right way to play Carnoustie right now, and I think that is going to make for an exciting next 3 days of golf.
So people that have covered the tournament for a long time said to me they've never seen the course like this, or a course like this at an Open Championship. How has it changed Carnoustie?
Well, guys are hitting 5 irons 300 yards. So you know,
okay.
This is usually a tournament where, you know, guys are hitting drivers 260, 270 yards with the wind. So you would think that would take some bite out of the course, that guys can keep the driver in three woods in the bag. However, Carnoustie really is a precision course. So, yes, you can hit a driver 400 yards. The problem is that ball might be heading to a pot bunker or a burn, which, I mean, those are one-stroke, probably two-stroke penalties in some cases. So in many instances, even though, yes, it is shortening the course, it's bringing in a lot more trouble than guys are used to. So it has led to some interesting shots. Guys are over-driving 380-yard holes. But at the same time, you're also seeing guys land it short 40 yards and getting into spots they have no idea where the ball is going. So because of that, it's really a cedar we're not used to seeing at this tournament, which, to be honest, is already a unique event amongst the major brethren. So I think a lot of guys, to Carnoustie's credit, no one's complaining about the setup. They're just saying it speaks to the creativity they're not used to. And it's far from what we heard at Shinnecock Hills when the players were complaining about the setup. So overall, I think this is about as good as the RNA could have hoped for day one.
Well, Joel, and this was a story heading into the tournament just because of the conditions, but the role some of these guys are getting is literally, quite literally, the length of an American football field, 100 or so yards. I mean, it's incredible.
It's I think on one hole, Tiger Woods hit a 5 or 6 iron, excuse me, and the ball ran 90 yards. And, you know, obviously, especially a 6 iron with hitting and stopping right away. And again, it's fun for us to watch, and it's certainly thrilling to see guys roll out that far. But it really does bring another difficulty into play. A Tiger Woods hit an iron off a par 5 and had an 8 iron left in. So it really is testing these guys' approaches and their mindset. That being said, then you have guys like Jon Rahm who decide, you know what, I'm just going to try to be as aggressive as possible, and it worked. He was 2 under. So there really is no one right way to go about this, which I think is going to really be interesting to see how this transpires over the next 3 days.
There is a wrong way to go about it, and the pre-tournament favorite, Dustin Johnson, found it, a triple bogey on the 18th hole. How was his day?
You know, even before the triple bogey, he never really got things going. You saw a bunch of red numbers early. The morning wave played a little bit easier than the afternoon. But going into 17, DJ only had one birdie. And I think that's what is almost more shocking to me than how he finished. So to him, it really was kind of what we mentioned earlier. He was hitting the ball far, but he couldn't keep it straight. And he found a lot of pot bunkers. And even though the rough is pretty manageable because the drought, yes, it's making the ball go far, but it's really taken a bite out of the Carnoustie's notorious rough. Even in that case, the way where DJ was finding his drives were really just unmanageable. So for him to have any shot of even making the weekend, he really needs to keep the ball somewhere straight. The problem is that's not really his forte. He's a guy who bomb and gouges courses to death. So unless something really dramatic happens, I don't think we're going to even see DJ make Saturday.
With Joel Beall of Golf Digest, this is Overdrive. Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller, TSN 1050. So Tiger comes in at an even par 71. He'd been slightly under for most of the day, betrayed by his putter on a couple of occasions. Joel, would you consider this, I mean, he's five strokes off the lead, 18 holes in. Would you consider this a successful first round for the post-injury Tiger who has typically struggled to get out of the gate?
Yeah, I think it's a successful round, even with a pre-injury Tiger Woods. Thursday has always been his Achilles heel, especially this year. I think he ranked 165th in Thursday scoring, and it's got progressively better. The problem is he digs himself into such a big hole on Thursday, he's really in scramble mode all the way through. So tied for 30-30, he's totally fine. The only really two hiccups besides those missed short putts were parring two par fives that were very gettable today. Other than that, he played well. He kept the driver and the three wood in the bag for the most part. I know it was a little disconcerting, especially when Golf Channel would show these graphics of his competitors would be 80 or 90 yards ahead of him. But also just shows you that those yards don't mean much if you don't know how to hit the second shot. And for all the ups and downs Tiger's had this year, the second shot game has been very good. I think he's in six, I believe, in strokes gained approach. So, yeah, five shots back. But you know what? I think you told him before this day started, hey, even par, give you a good shot to make some noise on Friday. He would take it. And, yeah, tied 33rd. And to be honest, there's not a lot of big names between him and Kevin Kisner. So, yeah, I think fans of Tiger Woods have to be very happy with what they saw on Thursday.
How about Ian Poulter's shot today? Did you see that one?
We are still talking about Ian Poulter.
So that is
as well as Brandon Stones on the 18th hitting the grandstands and coming back towards the green. So we've seen a couple odd ones today.
Poulter,
I think you're going to see even more of that with the contours and how dried out it is. And given we associate Carnoustie with very hurting shots, I think it's been very interesting to see how it played out the first 12 hours.
So Poulter from the fescue skips it over the burn, through a pot bunker, and then lands it just beside the green. And he thought it was in the burn, did he not? He's thinking it's in the burn.
Oh, he all you need to look at is his reaction. He was already looking at his caddy what happened there, but the fact that it skirted that bunker and landed just to the left of the green, it really defied physics. We're still trying to figure out how it happened.
Joel, we got to let you go because time's our enemy, but we thank you so much for what you were able to give us, and I hope we can catch up again soon.
Sound good, guys. Have a good weekend.
All right, Joel Beall of Golf Digest and our Golf Insiders this week are brought to you by Subaru. Summer nights are made for Subaru with lease rates from 0.5% at your local Ontario Subaru dealer. Subaru, confidence in motion. Kevin Kisner is your leader after the first round of the Open Championship, 5-under par, and then there is a three-way tie for second, 4-under, and a three-way tie for fifth, 3-under par.
So when both guys are giving you the wind-up sign, I think that means we got to go.
All right. With which finger?
Oh,
the index?
Yeah.
Because it will transition.
I want to hear what we got coming back. I want to hear some. If we have BB coming back, then
Gord will be a happy guy.
Greatest moments in history are now up to you. This is TSN 1050's Sound Wars.
Yeah! It's 4:52 and you're listening to Overdrive. All right, the winner from today's Sound Wars battle between the Swiss coach Re Canada and Ovechkin's parade speech is the Swiss coach.
What sort of game are you expecting there?
Like a Canada team who dominates us again, and we try to hold against.
What did you learn about them in the pre-tournament game you played?
Learn that we are far away from them still. They're faster, they're bigger, they're stronger, they can shoot better, they can pass better, they can do everything better.
Ovechkin's parade speech received 40% of the vote. Well, Swiss coach received 60%. And now it's time for a Sound Wars battle in the Yes Guy, No Guy conference. First, seed number three, the communal spoon.
There was some other people that are a part of the show that came over, and they caught me eating the rice with the spoon.
The serving spoon?
What's wrong with you? And you always, when you eat, there's like shrapnel everywhere. So
is that that offside amongst
It's very offside.
You were Turk Broda. You double dipped that spoon and went You're after Costanza. A second mucking with the serving spoon.
I've done it 10 times. Is Costanza. That of a foul?
It's a despicable foul.
I'm not having rice.
You can't do that with a community batch of rice.
Okay, let's hear seed number six. Should I go to the vet?
I'm not going to lie. I'm being dead serious. My joints are starting to get sore, and I'm getting hot.
I'm really worried about you.
This is a stupid question, but don't you have to go to a vet?
No, you don't go to a vet.
But wouldn't a vet be able to tell you if you have rabies?
I think a doctor could probably do that. Someone said... You're doing your audience a disservice if the O-Dog doesn't show up tomorrow with a cone.
With the cone around his head.
That would be so funny,
oh,
dude.
Jesus.
Yeah. All right, go to TSN1050.ca, click on Sound Wars, and vote for your favorite, the communal spoon, or should I go to the vet? Voting for this Sound War closes tomorrow at 8 a.m. Listen to Landsberg in the morning for the results and for the start of a new Sound Wars battle on TSN 1050. Marley Rivera of ESPN, ESPN Deportes at the top of the 6 o'clock hour. At the top of the 5 o'clock hour, minutes away, Jabari Young, who covers the San Antonio Spurs for the San Antonio Express News, will try to pull the curtain back on Kawhi. It's Overdrive. Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller, TSN 1050.
You've been listening to Overdrive, delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com.